about phonics and whole language. And, you know, I heard both sides of that debate. Never really looked into it very much. Just, and I was a phonics kind of guy, just because the people who I respected were phonics kind of people. And so I kind of adapted this argument, this whole language argument that people use. And well, I really thought I should look into it. I wanted to know, because I couldn't get a feel for what people really didn't like about whole language and what people really did like about whole language and what people really didn't like about phonics and what people really liked about phonics. So I went and bought a book on whole language and started reading it. But I just couldn't get a feel. I've heard people arguing, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this does work, this does work. I mean, I couldn't really get a grasp on it. I was in my car one day. I don't know if I ever told you this story, Dean. I was driving my car, and I was driving around a couple blocks from my house, and I was just praying. I was asking God, why am I not smart enough to understand this? There's a difference between learning Aristotelian logic and learning how nature works. With Aristotelian logic, you end up being real satisfied every day. You know, you walk out and you go, wow, I kind of can figure stuff out for myself. I can create new meaning. And so every time you do that, you get smarter. You feel smarter. Well, but in science, when you kind of begin to figure something out, especially when you get into deeper sciences, you might figure something out, but it opens up like 10 more doors. And you go, well, you pick one of those doors and then it'll open up 10 more doors. You got to pick. You can't pick every door. You can't every time 10 doors open, you can't go after those 10 doors. And what I found out was the more you know, the dumber you get. it's the whole language thing. So I realized that the arguments weren't whether or not they work, because they both work. Whole language works. Phonics works. Has that surprised anybody in here? Whole language works. Did you know it works? The problem with it is, I think you disagree with me, don't you? Yeah, that's the point. That's right. See, we're making the wrong argument because they want everybody to be creative. The goal of whole language, and I've got a book here that even says that the goal of whole language is to make people creative. Well, in a biblical sense, we don't create anything. It's already been created. All we can do is learn more about what's going on in the universe, and so. So I realized right off the bat that there's something going on here besides just learning. And one was this Aristotelian versus Galileo kind of logic. So anyway, so I was driving around praying, and this came to me almost instantly. I just almost instantly understood, and it was the weirdest thing. You know, God, I can't get around saying God speaks to me. A couple times when I was in school, a couple girls used that to not go out with me. And so I thought, surely God doesn't speak to people not to go out with me. So here I am driving around, and all of a sudden, something that I couldn't get a grasp on, I'm praying, God, help me understand this. And all of a sudden, it was like a light came on in my car with no books. And it came on, and so I'm sitting there going, wow, I think God spoke to me, but I can't be sure, because it wasn't, well, I just understood. I mean, and so then I spent the last 10 years of my life trying to find the smoking gun where I could go up and show it to somebody and then go, oh, that's what whole language does. I spent 10 years doing that, and I found multiple stuff, and I'll sit it right in front of people, and most of the time, they'll just go, duh, so what? And so that's what I run into, and I imagine most of us will run into that. There are two, and only two, basic structures of thought. Didactic, which is teach and learn. God said, I am God, and the universe is designed, mathematical, and specific. The same yesterday, today, and forever. And it is the result of design. Dialectic, on the other hand, is dialoguing to consensus. We said, I am me, and the universe is self-existing, not created, and is defined and behaves statistically and generally. Truth is a result of environmental pressure. If you think about it, everything is a result of environmental pressure. And so when Dean was saying a little while ago that our nature is to get along with a group, it's because the group is putting environmental pressure on us. And How many of you have ever pulled up to a stop sign or a stoplight getting off an expressway, and you'll see one of those people holding the sign will work for food, and let's say it's a red light, and you happen to be in the lane right next to this person. Say it's a two-lane road, and you're on the far left-hand lane. There's the person holding the sign. You're eyeball to eyeball, and here's this person that, and if you've heard stories, you know that every time anybody offers these people a job, they never take them. They just want a handout, most generally. And somehow that person's putting pressure on you. You know, you're sitting there, you won't look at them, but when you do, you know, for some reason, here's this person who doesn't work, is putting pressure on you. What is it in us that we respond to this pressure? And so we get this pressure, by the way, is called cognitive dissonance. We are charged with training ourselves, our kids, and anyone who will listen. I'll bet you everybody in here is trying to make everybody listen. And we're charged with this for some dumb reason. I don't know. Anyway, we're charged with trying to make everyone listen which fork to take. There's only two worldviews. There's only two ways of looking at things. And we're charged with trying to explain to people which fork to take. In fact, this is what I drew up here. I named my roads Galileo and Aristotle. So we have Aristotle Boulevard and Galileo Boulevard. Now, the reason I said Galileo and Aristotle, because early on I recognized that when I read a phonics book, that this was something other than what I thought. And if you read a phonics book, the phonics book says a word sounds a certain way and it means a certain thing. If you read a whole language book, it means you create new meaning. Okay? So the phonics happens to be Galileo, and the whole language happens to be Aristotle. Well, so I went around and I started looking. I said, I wonder if there's anybody on the other side who realizes this. And so I went to it and found a book that was written in probably in the 20s, translated into English in 1935 by a guy named Kurt Lewin. His name was Levine. He was a German guy. The title of the first chapter of this book is, but anyway, this is a book that's written by absolutely the other side. And the first chapter of this book is called The Conflict Between Aristotle and Galilean Modes of Thought. And I recognized that when I picked up the whole language book. And so the goal of the phonics book is to make everybody feel good and be dumb. The purpose of phonics is to make everybody figure out what things really mean. And actually, when you figure out what everybody means, then you really are dumb because you realize how much you don't know. And that's a problem. Someone was talking earlier about psychology and what they've done. I'm more of a science guy. 2 + 2 = 4. And I've got a book that I'll just read one sentence out. It says, social psychology continues to provide the means for effectively adapting the knowledge to the contemporary student within the framework of the values set forth by John Dewey, Kurt Lewin, which is this book that I have, and J.L. Moreno. But somehow, psychology got at the table of science. I don't know how this happened. And a few years ago, I met a math professor, head of a math department at a Big 12 school. And I asked him if he realized that psychology was at the table of mathematics. And he said, he thought it was crazy. But he has since changed his mind and realized that psychology not only is at the table, but psychology is now the major player. And they're going after mathematics in a big way now. People may not realize it, but in our education system and in our society in general, where all the stuff Dean is coming down, the major government entity that's coming down is through VOTEC. And I have a magazine put out by the American VOTEC Association. I'll pass it around. But just look at the cover. It's a traditional schoolroom with screwdrivers and hammers and nails going around it. And tweaking it. So VOTEC is now the major educator in the United States. This is the third grade model, a cute little comic book made for third graders, put out by the VOTEC Association. I'm sure this comes out of the American VOTEC Association, but this one was printed by the Oklahoma VOTEC Association, but it's the same all over the country. And this is their model of decision making. And this is the dialectic model designed for third graders. And I'll pass this around and you can think it's really cute, but you just remember that in the didactic sense, you find a bill for over $100 and then you just give it back to who it belongs to. And then you look at this, and this is the dialectic model, which is cute in a bug's ear. And if you look at the sheet that I passed out, those are the DARE program, Xerox's Total Quality Edwards Deming Award-winning program is on there. And it is identical to this. It looks a little bit different, but if you look at it, and it's just a euphemism for all truth is relative, no hard facts hard and fast rules which exist for all time and all places. The governor of Oklahoma, who, by the way, was one of the finalists for the vice presidential job in for George W., put me on a committee in Oklahoma over education. I'd done all this research, and some people got wind that I'd done this research, and they thought it'd be handy having me on that committee because I, you know. Well, I was on that committee. It lasted about a year, year and a half, until they disbanded it because of me and two other people. But we forced them to admit that we bugged them all year. We kept saying, you guys, this is all coming right through out of SCANS documents. Is anybody familiar with SCANS documents? The last meeting we had, it got disbanded. I mean, it got disbanded about 2 weeks after this last meeting, but we had a meeting. They finally admitted that, yes, we are using SCANS. I mean, they'd been denied it for a year. Finally, they admitted, and they gave us the SCANS Learning a Living, a Blueprint for High Performance. So I got it and immediately went through it. I'd already been through it. I had the document already. And it just happened. About 6 months ago, I was talking to somebody, and I was sitting there talking about the old classroom and the new classroom. Whoever I was talking to said, oh, no, that's not true. That can't be true. And I said, I'll show you. So I went and got the book that I got when I was on that committee. It's like 3 or 4 years ago, and I just did it 6 months ago when I happened to be going through it. And I was right here on page 42. I started opening up that book. And in this comparison of these two classrooms, I'll define this first. In the conventional classroom, where the teacher's in the front of the room and teaches, the teacher knows the answer. Okay. In the SCANS classroom, the classroom of today, more than one solution may be viable, and teacher may not have an advance. So in other words, in the old classroom, teacher knows the answer in advance. The new classroom, teacher doesn't know the answer in advance. So if the teacher doesn't know the answer in advance, so the teacher knows the answer in advance, then the teacher makes the assessment. Well, if the teacher doesn't know the answer in advance, then who makes the assessment? The student makes the assessment. And this is real obvious on this sheet, page 42. So I went to show it to this friend of mine that I was talking to just 6 or 7 months ago, and I couldn't find page 42. I know it's in here somewhere. And I finally realized, see, most of the stuff is kind of hard. The dialectic is super simple, but they kind of dress it up and they make it look different. You know, I know, and Xeroxes might look a little different than the phone companies, but they all are identical. There's no difference between them. But this page really defined that. And the book that they gave us, they didn't have that page in there. That page was not in the book. And it was one. Isn't that just? Doesn't that give you goosebumps? I mean, it gives me goosebumps even right now. In the garden, Satan said to Eve, "Surely you will not die." Has it ever occurred to you that the original sin may not have had anything to do with the fruit, but may have something to do with a specific structure of thought? Have you ever thought that Antichrist, not in the tribulation sense necessarily, might be as simple as a simple structure of thought? In the garden when God gave man dominion over the animals and all the earth, have you ever contemplated that all the earth meant understanding nature enough to invent a light bulb, a TV, a computer, or any of the wonderful tools we have? When our nation was in its infancy, it took several farmers to produce enough for their own needs and enough left over, enough excess, to feed just one person. If someone were to study you comprehensively without meeting you, they could learn much about you. They could go to your house. Is it neat? Is it real neat? What kind of books? I'm sorry. What kind of books do you have? How many TVs? What kind of decorations are on your walls? Have you written things? What are your friends like? What is your office like? What kind of car do you drive? Is it low on oil? Is the engine compartment cleaner than the outside of the car? So when you look at nature, do you see something? Do you see design like someone would see if they studied you? And if this is true, have you ever thought that might be Christ-like? It might be as simple as a simple structure of thought. So ultimately, again, there are two and only two basic simple structures of truth. One is fixed and final. It's quantitative. It's measurable. The other is continuously revised. You can't have anything else. It's either fixed and final or continuously revised. I have thought about this and thought about it. I have asked everybody I know. Is there something you could have besides something fixed and something moving? I think that's it. And both of these views are absolutely and unequivocally religious because they attempt to answer where we came from and where we are going. In fixed and final truth, truth is a result of design. Most great inventions are the result of one man's ability to take dominion over a fixed nature. Think about it. In order to invent a television, for instance, you have to have a thorough understanding of electromagnetic waves. You have to invent a transmitter and a receiver. Electromagnetic waves are always defined numerically in velocity, frequency, and amplitude. Numbers are only good for measuring natural systems. Have you ever thought about that? What good are numbers? They're only good for measuring natural systems. In fact, the dialecticians don't like numbers. They despise them. And in fact, they're going after the math departments across the country right now. They have been for the last couple of years. The scientist observer fully understands what he is observing. He discovered, invented TV. He did not create it. I call people who use a dialectic dialecticians. Have you heard that before? Bill Clinton is probably the greatest. This is serious. He's probably the greatest dialectician who's ever lived. Dialecticians say a scientist can never be brilliant because a scientist only observes nature. The observer and the observation are separate. They will say that true brilliance comes when the observer becomes one with the observation. Now, let me make a point here. This is a dictionary of words. John Dewey's dictionary. Everybody's familiar with John Dewey. Probably America's greatest philosopher. That's what the dictionary says. This is a definition of mind. Mind has not remained a passive spectator of the universe, but has produced and is producing certain results. Is that mind over matter? Suppose there's a wreck. The scientist would want to know the coefficient of friction of the tires, the coefficient of friction for the road, the mass of the car, the velocity of the car. He could figure exactly how the wreck occurred. However, say there are four observers, one on each corner, and each saw the wreck differently. Yet each agreed to come to consensus. In other words, each observer would have to give up something he actually saw for the good of the group. Also, the observer actually changed the outcome of the wreck. The observers become one with the observation. George Lukács, the greatest Marxist, Antichrist, intellect of this century, says the goal is not consensus, but procedural consensus. So even if the scientist and the four observers come to the same conclusion, the scientist would be wrong because he did not dialogue to consensus. The outcome is not what is important. It's how you reach the outcome.